You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Therese Slotkin. She's talking to me from New York City. Therese, thanks so much for being with me today.
It's my pleasure.
Therese, you've been a long-standing New York City resident. When we were just talking before we hit the record button here, you were saying how you've been living in Tribeca, which at one time was a place where there were many artists, but you've had to fight a battle to stay there, correct?
That's correct. I'm fortunate enough to be covered by what's known as the Loft Law, and there are a couple of us still remaining here. But in the late 70s, early 80s, it was a great neighborhood. It was artists. There was still a lot of commerce going on down here, few artist hangout bars, kind of a small scene, and really very interesting. I consider it a very formative period in my life.
Well, so let's begin with that period. What were you doing then in terms of it being a formative period in terms of your work? What were you doing at that point?
Well, my husband, who's from England, and probably someone you should interview, his name is Richard Miller, had been doing poetry and publishing in England. He came here. We met again. It was a downtown art world meet, kind of way we met. And we started doing an art magazine, a magazine of art called Spanner NYC. And we were including a lot of our colleagues, young colleagues, who we thought were doing very interesting work. And the criteria was to produce a work of art for the magazine, not just document a painting or a sculpture. And then simultaneous to that, we were also part of collaborative projects, which again was a really interesting art group, kind of circumventing the traditional venues for showing art, museums, galleries, curators, and basically doing our own work in non-traditional places, whether that meant people breaking into a city building and having an art show there, or doing the Times Square show, which is a really well-known show. And there were a lot of kind of fun themed shows, it was really I'd say it was just a very open, creative door. There was no curating. They were pretty open to everybody, kind of hanging work floor to ceiling. And it was really, there was just a real immediate energy to it all. Like, hey, let's do this. And, and then people did it. And I think the magazine my husband and I worked on, Spanner, really fit into that as well.
And that was a time, of course, when we weren't talking about sales and auctions all the time. That had just begun, if at all, then. So the spirit of these shows weren't. There was kind of a nonprofit spirit, right? It was showing for art's sake.
In retrospect, you have to say that some people, I'd say there were people who were on different tracks with it all, but I think our spirit was still very much of a 60s mindset, and being a nonprofit space and doing it ourselves and being open-ended, I think there was a real 60s kind of energy to it.
Yeah, no, go on. So it was that.
No, you go on.
How did it evolve? So how it began, and what happened to the magazine and that group as it turned into the 80s or later.
Well, I think it went on for quite a while, and then, it just, a lot of the original members got into other things. Some people moved into gallery situations. I mean, people were starting to move in different kinds of directions. Without really planning it, I really kind of segued out of the art world and started doing photo assignments. There is a difference between art making and the art world, and I don't know if I was ever on an art world track where I was going to be in a gallery and making a living doing my artwork. And opportunities had come up for me to do some assignments, and I really enjoyed doing them. And I think at a certain point I began to realize that for me as a photographer, art could be that I could integrate art and commerce. I think for a lot of artists, they need to keep their art and how they make a living separate. But for me, the integration worked out really well, and it became really enjoyable. And I found that one kind of fed the other. There were times I would do something that was a personal project, and then that could lead to a commercial assignment, and vice versa. Sometimes I would do a commercial assignment and say, "Wow, I'm really excited about that. It's that photo's got a life above and beyond the assignment." So I really enjoyed that experience. In terms of the magazine, we did quite a few issues. I think we did 3 printed issues called Spanner NYC, and then I did a postcard project, and my husband did a stamped rubber suit. There's a really good book called that came out about 2 years ago called Collab and Related Activities that was published by Printed Matter. And I think Max Schumann really, really caught the energy that was going on then, and the different projects, and who, you know, and how it got represented in the book. I think it really captured all that very well.
Max Schumann was the director of Printed Matter.
He currently still is, and he did a great job on the book. I think his sense of it and capturing the energy of it, it's just really well done. I think everyone was very pleased with it. The magazine part, I mean, the magazine that my husband and I were doing, it's hard work to raise money from, you know, any of that stuff. It just takes a lot of work to raise money to do these projects. So we did a couple of issues, and actually we're still selling it at Printed Matter. And, we get called, they'll regularly call us up to refill the prescription, what they have in stock. So it lives on.
You mean those are reprints of past issues, of course.
No, we still have plenty of magazines here. I think the first issue is getting close to, we're running it down. But, and they promoted it well. They always supported it.
So wait a minute, let me ask this, because that's kind of interesting. So you still have copies of the first issue, and when was that first issue published?
I'm going to, off the top of my head, let's see, I'm going to say 78. Could be 7,
wow,
the beginning of 78.
Wow, so all the original issues are still available.
Yeah. No, Printed Matter has them. And, if you Google Spanner NYC, I mean, they seem to be coming up in secondary markets and whatnot. But it's I'll have to say, I'm going to have to get your address and send you some. It was hard work, but it was also kind of enjoyable to do. Sometimes we got, I don't know, we didn't always get, I mean, I felt sometimes the artists didn't cooperate, and it wasn't like we were making money or trying to become famous, on their coattails or something. I mean, they were relatively unknown artists, but sometimes the artists were not as, I mean, these were our friends, and sometimes they weren't as easy to work with as one might have hoped. But that's,
Of course,
right. In fact, my husband and I continue to do collaborative print projects. We do an annual holiday card, which we do printed, and we still send out snail mail. I think we started it in 2000 and then did one in 2001. And I don't know, and then people kept saying they were looking forward to the following year and the following year and the following year. So we've been doing these cards. And then, it's always a graphic. It's always printed, and it's something we really think of it as a collaborative project that that the two of us do together. I mean, on either year, either one of us might take the lead on the design or something. But it's some. I think our sensibility is sufficiently integrated that no matter who takes the lead, it's really a reflection of our combined sensibility. So, you know, I guess that's still very much a part of our lives.
And of course, in that time, you know, late 70s and then 80s, now people talk about that as this pivotal time in New York City in the arts, with artists like David Wanarovich, who just had that show at Whitney, and a lot of East Village artists and people in New York City. Do you look back
at it that way?
Because your friends were those people.
Well, what's interesting in Basquiat is the amount of attention Colab has been getting in the last couple of years. There's been a lot of interest in the Times Square show and the real estate show and recreations of these shows. It's happening in other aspects of my life, too. That work I did 25, 30 years ago is being kind of re-energized. And at first it was hard to go back into old files of work and, you know, you're in the present, you're in the past, you know, you're looking at old stuff and saying, maybe it's not as good as I thought it was. I think I've come to a point with it now that I'm starting to really enjoy it, and it's becoming interesting that there is so much interest in that period. In fact, the other day I was with a friend, and there's a Velvet Underground show taking place in kind of a pop-up show on Broadway right around NYU, and a lot of the attendees were younger people. So that period is pretty, still has a lot of energy to it, and it's still, you know, maybe influencing younger artists.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's true, because that period does still seem to be inspiring younger artists and artists of all kinds continually. It
mm-hmm.
seems to be this
mm-hmm.
kind of wonderful, wonderful time. So to talk about your work as part of Colab, but then also your own photography, you're saying some of your first assignments, there was a blending between art and commercial photography, right? Isn't that kind
yeah,
of interesting?
Yeah.
Some was more of one,
exactly.
more the other.
I mean, yeah. And, you know, the fact is I needed a way to earn money in New York City. And, you know, there were certain, you know, you could, I mean, there were certain, you know, I mean, you could waitress, you could taxi cab drive. There was a lot of guys were doing loft renovations, including my husband. And, you know, I really found that, hey, this is great. I can work as a photographer, and I really enjoyed it. And what I really enjoyed it was the interaction too. I really didn't need to be. I'm a fairly introspective person, and being that isolated and home in my studio wasn't always that interesting to me. I liked being out. I liked being energized, and sometimes, you know, just being out in the world can, you know, spark something that's going to lead to a project. So, I've been very happy. I mean, I feel very fortunate that I could combine art and commerce.
That is something that's kind of hard to do often for most people. Is there a particular project that comes to mind where it combined art and commerce, whether it was, you know, journalism or a wedding or portraits? Was there?
Well, the wedding, weddings have been, I really got into weddings at a time when it really started to go over to a storytelling style. And I was working with some other people, and we had a really good run with that. And I really had, you know, enjoyable people, enjoyable experiences. It was always kind of fun to just kind of hop into people's lives in this very intimate moment and kind of learn. I mean, I really like learning all about people. You know, what do you do? How did you meet? What, you know, who's going to be at the wedding? Are your parents' friends from kindergarten going to be there? You know, I just really find all that very, very interesting. There was another project that I began, about 1989, 1990, and it was really kind of by accident. I was doing some portraits of friends, and somebody came over with a friend of theirs, and I photographed the two of them together, and it was seeing two people in the frame was really interesting because, you know, how they interact with each other and just the spatial relationship and how much more comfortable sometimes people are when they're being photographed with somebody. It's a project called Mixed Doubles. And I photographed various groups, various friends, you know, I mean, all various kinds of pairings. They could be related, they could be friends, they could be work colleagues. You know, I wasn't just doing like mothers and daughters or fathers and sons. It was any kind of pairing. And then I brought it out. I know what happened. I started to show it to some clients who were coming by to look at wedding work and whatnot. And there were people who were getting married, having kind of informal weddings in lofts in Soho, and started looking at it and saying, that's what we want. We don't want traditional wedding photography. That's a lot of fun. That's what we want you to do. So that I did those, and then I had the opportunity. I had a grandmother in a nursing home, and I presented it to the staff there. It's, you know, it's hard to get into nursing home as a photographer, but they knew us, they knew the family, and I said, I have a really fun project to do. And it was a lot of fun to do there. I spent a lot of time talking to people. There's only one rule. You can only be photographed once in a given project. So I really helped, you know, I talked with people about who they wanted to be photographed with, and I brought in like a white background and studio lights. So it was a real portable studio. And I think, people really enjoyed it. And that, you know, that was a lot of fun. It's also very interesting, I think, to work with older people who are not your family members. Because they're just people, and it's not the whatever family baggage there is or emotional relationships. So it really became a very enjoyable project. And then I had a friend who had just moved to Red Hook in Brooklyn, and she invited me to exhibit the mixed doubles I had done up until that point. And, you know, and I said to her, well, so, you know, rather than exhibiting them, why don't I do the project in Red Hook? Because that's a very kind of diverse community. There were all waterfront people, there's public housing people, there are artists moving in. It had a lot, you know, they weren't necessarily interacting with each other, but there was a lot of activity going on there. And she said, we'll do both. We'll exhibit the photos and we'll have a photo session. So we did that, and it was really well received. I went back the following year and did more mixed doubles, and the only rule the second time around was that you couldn't be photographed with the same person again. You had to reach out to another. You know, it's about connections. You had to reach out to another person. And then we got a very small grant, and I put a lot of work into reaching out to the neighborhood, setting up the photos in different locations, and, you know, the photo sessions in different locations. And it was great. I think it really just confirms so much of what I think photography is about and what the project's about and the importance of connection. And recently there was an opportunity to we exhibited it. There were shows that had come up along the way. So they were exhibited. And then there was a new librarian at the Red Hook Library who had met Florence, my friend, at the Kentler Gallery. And she, Florence showed her the photos. And she said, well, why don't we put some of them up? They had a little window box display. And I've got to say, I think, and this is, we're talking about like 25 years later, and I'd say every single person who walked in the library was either in the pictures or knew somebody in the pictures. And it says something about the neighborhood, too, that you do have that much generational continuity to it. There was a really nice confirmation to that in terms of just the power of photography. I mean, I wouldn't call them high art. I mean, they're black and white. They're kind of snapshots. Well, they're better than snapshots, but you know, they're portraits of two people together, and you know, people really look back on them with just such enthusiasm and joy, and it was a real celebration to the point where I'd like to try and raise money and return to the project next summer. So we'll see what happens with that.
It's very interesting because there's a, you know, in the way you set up the whole project, because there's also this spatial relationship, right, within the frame of the photograph. When you think of people at weddings, of course, they're often touching each other. There's some kind of affection happening there. But with people brought together of different backgrounds that aren't necessarily so close, it's also about the space between them and that kind of interaction, right, which is very intimate or not so intimate, but I would think it's something that's revealed quite a bit by photography.
Yeah, I think people are also more comfortable. You know, I mean, unless someone is very comfortable in front of the camera, if you ask somebody, you know, say, I'd like to have you sit for a portrait, they might be a little intimidated. If they're with another person in the photograph, they're just completely relaxed. It breaks down so much of the, you know, anxiety. There were a lot of really, I mean, I always felt good about the project. It was, again, you know, it was hard to keep, I mean, it needed so much pre-work, and I just couldn't spare the time because I was doing a lot of weddings at that point and had a lot of other jobs. But it was also nice to see how the response 25 years later, and people looking at the picture saying, "There I am," and they were maybe 5 years old, or a woman saying to a little girl looking at the picture, "Do you know who that is?" And it's a 5-year-old girl in the photo, and she looks at it and says, "That's mommy," you know. And there was a lot of really, really positive energy in it.
That's wonderful. Teresa, it's great talking to you about this. So moving forward, before I ask you the last question about what you're reading, currently that project you're not doing, the mixed doubles, but you're continuing to do commercial photography and other projects?
Yeah. And like I said, you know, I'm hoping to do that. I mean, I never felt mixed doubles was not, I mean, it never, like, ended. It was just, like, tabled, and I'm trying to write some grants now to move that forward. Like I said, there's the collab work that has, you know, really resurfaced. There was a wonderful women's political group I was involved in the 90s, the Women's Action Coalition, WAC, and we just had the best demonstrations. Terrific graphics, terrific energy, just smart women from, I'd say quite a few from the art world, but I mean lawyers and writers and, you know, just a whole range of women. And, you know, I mean, that continually gets, I continually get requests for photos for exhibits or for reprint. And, you know, I mean, the issues are still current. But it was also another really smart, high energy group, you know, where you really, when you connect with people, like you've really gone through the trenches together. And I'd say some of my closest friends now are people I met in WAC, and even the more casual people I meet that, you know, I knew from WAC. I mean, it's a special connection. It's like, hey, we did this together, you know, and, you know, we really can look back on it and, you know, with a lot, feel really good about it. So I guess I've had a lot of really kind of nice, you know, kind of these art world related experiences, and they've all been very formative to me. And they've really shaped me aesthetically. I feel really good about them all.
And just to mention to those listening, of course, the collab, which we were talking about in the beginning a bit. There's a book that Max Schumann. That's
basically
still being sold.
Basically,
he edited, right? That's still being sold about that. To learn more about it, because that was a fascinating series of shows and events that led into more things, like you were just talking about other collectives and ideas.
And I think, I mean, like I said, that book just does it well. He really can. You know, he didn't turn it into, you know, and he just kept the raw. I think he was able to capture the rawness of it in a really good way.
Well, and though that was a very different time, it still seems to be a model that's an antidote to the art world now in some ways, because there are what we now call pop-up shows everywhere. And though it's a very different world than it was during the years of CoLab, you know, perhaps that's part of the effect that it's had. We see more and more artists doing different things in storefronts and other things. So
I've enjoyed going out to Brooklyn, like, you know, and seeing not just art, but whether any sort of pop-up businesses, whether people are you know, coming up with food ideas or coffee roasting or, you know, chocolate makers and stuff. There does seem to be a nice, there is some entrepreneurial, like, outside the system, stepping out and let's do this ourselves. Let's see what we come up with. Let's see where it's going to go. So, you know, it's nice to see that there is that, you know, that energy does continue. And New York's a tougher place now than it used to be too. You know, it's, I think it's, you know, we could get by. We had cheap enough rent and ways to make money that you could survive, and it's a much harder place to live now.
Absolutely. Therese, let me ask you the last question. What are you reading at the moment?
I feel like most of the time I'm always reading software and catalogs and how to download programs. But interesting, you know, and I thought about that because I had written, emailed you earlier today, and one of the most profound books, I mean, I'm not just reading it this minute, but, you know, read very recently, was I went back and reread Catcher in the Rye and came away with a whole different take on it than I had when I read it 50 years ago. I understood it. You know, when I read it in high school, it was, this guy's kind of a whiny rich kid or something. But when you go back, when I went back and read it, and he's talking about the loss of his brother, his younger brother had died, and he's in pain and grieving, and, you know, what he's responding to, the artificiality of the world around him, is because nobody is sharing his grief, including his parents who are having a Christmas party, and the people at, you know, the teachers and that, I guess, the headmaster at the private school. No one is acknowledging the pain this poor boy is in, and it never occurred to me what that book was about. I really advise anyone to reread it if they haven't read it in 50 years. I just came away with such a different take on it, and just feel so, I just have so much empathy for him that I never had on the first reading. And there's so much about cultural identity, and I've read various books about people's, you know, identity experiences and, you know, crossing cultures and whatnot. So I guess I'm giving thought to some of my own what my culture is, and maybe I need to do some reading on my own culture. You know, and who I am, and, you know, so that's on my. In fact, I got a Linda Nochlin, who was an art critic. She died not too long ago. She was a very well known art critic, and I came across a book of hers called The Jew in Text, and it's essays about, you know, how Jews, I guess, were portrayed in art and text and whatnot. And I thought, well, maybe I just need to do some of my own reading and kind of think about, you know, my own identity. And sometimes I feel like I'm a reader in search of a genre. You know, I don't buy new books anymore. I'm sort of more like a chance reader, whether it's like, you know, give a book, you know, leave a book, take a book kind of thing, or the libraries are all selling books now for, you know, old paperbacks, 50 cents or a dollar. So, you know, kind of it's like, gee, I always wanted to read that, or I always wanted to reread that. So, but, you know, I'm always, like, interested in you know, finding books that really challenge my thinking, that kind of like split my brain in half and say, wow, you know, that's really changed the way I think about things in a kind of an aesthetic way, you know, like that really challenges how I think about something. So that's what I think about.
Therese, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. It was a lot easier than I thought it might be.
I'm glad.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.